everyone, and welcome to episode 76 of season 11 of Movie Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Travis Bowe of Real Comic Heroes and of Minute of Thieves. Welcome back to the show, Travis.
Hello there.
So, episode 76 begins with the wounded men being taken inside and ends with Doc continuing to try to put an IV line in. So, we ended things on Friday where, Doc and Renee had a nice moment, nice conversation, and it was interrupted because someone needs help. I mentioned the fact that I loved how Renee just sprung into action to go help. And ironically, Doc didn't. He's been running around this entire throughout part six. And he's there, what's the phrase, Johnny on the stick? No, that's probably not the
spot.
Johnny on the spot. Right. He's been Johnny on the spot. And here he's not. I mean, I wonder if it's supposed to be that they're trying to show that he's been taken out of the whole situation because he's having this one-on-one conversation with this beautiful nurse who he sees that he could potentially talk to forever. It could be.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Since there's a shot here looking at the truck that they're, that's kind of the focus of where they're getting the people off of and into the church. So on Friday's minute we talked about the red parachutes, and you can see them again. Yeah. In this sort of minute. So I quickly just kind of looked up, were red parachutes used in World War II? It says yes, that they were red marked parachute gear were used during World War II. Colored parachutes, red, green, yellow, blue, and natural, were used in the U.S. Army to identify cargo drops, with red often signifying specific supplies or ammunition. So it doesn't specify like medicine, like we kind of theorized, but right. So these would have just been parachutes, not flags or banners or anything like that.
My assumption is I think you are right, though, that I think different colors designate a different type of supply.
Yeah.
That should make sense.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll never know. And Renee helps the walking wounded in, and Doc Rowe just follows her in. And once again they give us a shot of this entire the street.
Mm-hmm.
And along with the street, we see the other soldiers walking around a little bit, getting themselves organized. But we once again see the row of dead bodies just on the
ground. Oh, I know.
There are certain parts in this miniseries, whatever you want to call it, where they just show the real brutality of war.
Right.
Just having these bodies lying on the ground in the snow, with a whole bunch of like broken wooden chairs, it looks like.
I hadn't even noticed the little pile of bodies here in the foreground on the right side of the screen, because it'll be in tomorrow's or the next set of minutes. Where the truck is parked, there's like a wire, not wire.
There's a fence.
A fence.
Right, and below the fence
next. There's a pile of bodies over there. We have another look at that pile in the next chunk of minutes. So I wasn't even like thinking to look, you know, here in this area. But yeah, it's crazy to me to have bodies stacked up like this. But I mean, I don't know what else you'd do with them at this point. Like, yeah,
Right. I don't think there really
it's
is much they
wild.
could do with it. And whatever. I mean, Joe Toy was helped out with the bodies because Dacre was able to find a pair of
Yeah.
nine shoes.
Yeah.
And then we you know the it's we get a fade, and then when it comes back up, we see snow falling, to remind us that it's Christmas time. And first of all, it's a great shot.
Yeah.
It's a nice calm shot. Here we've been in the middle of a lot of battles and stuff like that, and here you just have snow falling, and you could see three silhouettes of heads popping out of a foxhole.
Yeah.
And then we get to see who's there, and we see that it's Babe Garnier and Compton that are all in there. And Garnier looks like he's really freezing his butt off. I'm
Yeah.
sure it's cold, but I mean, he looks the coldest of the three. And then Compton says, "Now I know how they felt." He goes, "What? Who? The Legionnaires. When they were watching the Huns, the Goths, the Visigoths. Visigoths? Jesus Christ. Barbarians. Ah, they came right through here, right through these trees, just sweeping down to burn the shit out of Rome. That's a hell of a long ride. So what? What's college like, Buck? You got time to hit the books with cheerleaders running their fingers through your hair. Hell, babe, I can't even remember." So,
I like that's a great response.
yes, but I also love
Great.
this whole conversation because,
Yeah, yeah.
where else can you have a conversation talking about, legionnaires and cheerleaders? That doesn't fit in. So what do you know about the legionnaires?
Other, I mean, only that they were the Roman soldiers or associated with Rome. Yeah, I kind of looked. I don't know if you're about to go into this, but I looked up like, basically, I just typed in almost quoting, kind of what he says here, and took me to a Reddit post where they are physically, like, there was no evidence that the Legionnaires and the Visigoths ever crossed swords in Belgium, like here. He's
Okay, well,
saying this at.
first of all, Buck Compton can be wrong.
Well, right. And that's
he's
what.
not a historian.
Okay, yeah. It's delivered as if, like, oh, this, we're on the same battlefield that
That's right.
this, historic battle took place.
Exactly.
But it's kind of the post went on to talk about, like, or some people were theorizing, like, he's not literally meaning this is the battlefield. He's more figuratively talking about this must have been what it felt like, centuries ago when those two, armies fought, and it was kind of the calm before the storm, and you're waiting, and the Visigoths are like just beyond that tree line or whatever. So yeah, I like that it's he delivers it as if, this is the same spot, but
Right.
he might be thinking it's more, this is my interpretation of what it must have been like. So yeah.
That's very true. So I mean, basically, what I looked up was who are the various enemies that the Legionnaires fought over I think it's nearly a century that there were Legionnaires. So they fought the Carthaginians during the Punic Wars. They fought the Gauls and the Celts, which was during Julius Caesar's time.
Yeah.
They fought the Germanic tribes,
Okay.
which, if I remember correctly, in Gladiator, they were
Yeah. Yeah.
that was their thing. They
Yeah.
fought the Parthians and the Sassanic empires. Which are
I'm not
basically around like where Iran is these days,
Oh, okay.
or Who knows by the time this comes out where Iran was these days? I don't know. I'll have to
Right.
wait and see that. They fought against the Hellenistic kingdoms, which were the successors of Alexander the
Greek?
Great. Yeah, Greek.
Yeah.
They fought against the British tribes. There was a there was a revolt by Queen Boudica.
Oh, yeah,
Against
Boudica.
the Boudica, okay, against the Ninth Legion, and yeah, that's that, there were also a lot of civil wars. You have Caesar versus Pompey, you have Octavian versus Mark Antony, you have the Year of the Four Emperors, and the Crisis of the Third Century. Basically, everyone fighting for the thrones.
Yeah.
And then you have the more modern legions. You have the French Foreign Legion,
Right.
which started in 1831 and still goes, still is being used today, I guess, or it's still so they fought in the Crimean War, the Mexican Intervention, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam. And then you have the Czechoslovak Legion, which was a World War I army that fought against the Central Powers and then later the Bolsheviks during the Russian Civil War and stuff like that. So yeah, that's you know, but it's always funny that you have characters in movies that went to college and they're known as the
Hey, college boy.
that's right, they're the professors, you know, they're the ones
Yeah.
who know everything. So apparently
Go to college to get stupid.
maybe not back then, maybe not back in the 40s. I don't know. I mean, Buck himself, I mean,
Was cool.
I don't know if you know anything about Buck's real history.
No, I didn't look up Buck Compton.
Okay, so I mean, one of the things that is amazing about him is that he was a lawyer later in life,
Okay.
and he was actually a what's going on? He was the prosecutor, he was the lead prosecutor in the trial against Sirhan Sirhan.
Okay.
You know, the guy who assassinated RFK.
That's right. Okay, that's right. I was like, where do I know that from? And it's like, I just finished the series, and at the end, they kind of tell you what each person kind of went on to do. That's right.
And he was also a justice on the California Court of Appeals. He was a judge.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just it, he's the professor here for them. But hey, it works. And again, I like this whole
Yeah.
conversation. You know, because again, it starts off talking about the Legionnaires and ends up talking about you basically have these two Philly boys that you know what they're thinking of is okay, college cheerleaders. That's all you got.
Yeah.
And then we hear some gunfire in the distance. You know, just to remind these guys where they are. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I think it's like just like one gunshot, even. Like, it's not even return fire or anything. It's like,
That's right.
what do you
And
think
it's
that
right
was, you know?
after Buck says, I can't even remember.
Yeah. You mentioned how cold they look, and I think this was all done. I read that they used like a
Yeah, this is
big
all like
air
sunset.
base, or not air, not. Yeah. So, but as I was watching this, like, I'm pretty sure all the cold breath is added in post, because it's like it comes out in these little puffs and then disappears, you know. And that's kind of how cold breath works, but like it's more note when you look at it, you know, it's a little more noticeable of like, oh, I think that's digitally added in. But it works, you know, when you're just watching the show, it doesn't, it plays as real. So And they'd look cold as
Yes, they
hell,
do.
so.
There is even no question about that. But
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
they're actors. That's what they're based on.
Yeah,
They're
yeah.
paid to act.
It's funny, like as I watched this, especially this episode and maybe the previous episode, I forgot that foxholes were like a World War II thing. I for some reason I thought we were done, having warfare in holes. Like, I associate obviously the trenches with World War I, and so I think I just in my head I just lumped foxholes in with trenches, and that was, like we were beyond foxholes and trenches by World War II, and that everything was more, straightforward, tanks but so it's just with as much in this episode, like as much time as they spend just like, freezing in these foxholes, it's like, oh yeah, this would have been just awful.
Well,
So.
again, you also have to take into consideration when this was. This is, I mean, we know that this is Christmas time. This is,
Yeah,
the
yeah.
part of the coldest time around, and that's one of the things that the 101st needed to deal with. They didn't have a choice. They were
Yeah.
stuck in this area to have to deal with everything.
With improper gear and no
Yes,
ammunition and
but they never admitted to being surrounded, so I guess that's what's
right,
important.
right.
That's what we should be happy about. And then they get startled by the fact that
Yeah.
Doc has shown up. Surprise, surprise, right? And but you gotta say these guys have great reflexes because they're all ready to shoot,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
thankfully they don't.
Yeah, I think Babe like has his rifle, ready to go, or maybe it's,
No,
oh,
Garnier's in the
it's
middle.
Garnier who's like, yeah. I forgot which one kind of got their rifle like trained on Doc first, but it was definitely Garnier.
You go, "Hey, it's Doc." And you go, "Sergeant." He goes, "Efren, Lieutenant." He goes, "Wrap up." Never calls anybody by their nickname. He once called me Edward. "Is that right?" "Yeah." "Edward? That's your name?" "Yeah." So it is pretty funny that that's the way Doc is. He's nice and by the book, I guess you can say.
Do you think it, as a medic, it's more, not that he doesn't want to get to know these
Well,
guys, but like
he probably
it's
does.
easier for me to, yeah, like it's easier to call these people by their rank and not get as personal with their names, or nicknames at least.
Okay, again, there is something to that.
Yeah.
The idea is that, okay, we want to make sure that that you're able to treat people without having any emotions around. It probably is not very simple to deal with the type of stuff that he's dealing with, where when you have all of the these emotions coming up in the middle about the fact that this is a good
Yeah.
friend of mine or whatever it is, that type of thing. So yeah, I
Yeah.
think part of what they've shown us, again, whether it's true or not, nobody will ever know, because as everyone will find out later this week, there isn't much we know about Doc Rowe, while he was in Easy Company. It wasn't He didn't really talk about it throughout his life,
Yeah.
but he didn't deal with it easily either. Apparently, again, somewhat of a spoiler alert that we're going to deal with. We'll hear from Thackeray's grandson, but he drunk a lot, or drank. He
Okay.
to try to deal with everything that he went through and everything that he saw.
Man,
Oh,
that's yeah,
completely,
that's
completely.
understandable.
I'm not saying that in a
Yeah.
judgmental way at all. It's
No, no, no. Yeah.
based on what I've heard here. So obviously this is the type of stuff that But yeah. So at this point they continue their conversation, and it was funny, you don't look like an Edward. Which is a funny line, because when you don't know somebody, to try to guess what their name would be, and based on how they look,
Yeah.
do you look like a Travis? Do I look like a Rob? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Apparently, our
Right.
parents both thought that we did, and that's why they decided to name us these things. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah.
It's in some ways you could just say it's luck of the draw.
Yeah.
It's not as if it's something that you really can plan ahead and say, oh, that one, he looks like a such and such, or she looks like a such and such.
Yeah.
So it's just a funny line, saying they look like an Edward. But the truth is,
Yeah.
no one calls him Edward. They just call him either Heffron or Babe.
Right.
It works. Works with the way that they show this, and Doc eventually just leaves them to move on to the next foxhole where he can try to figure stuff out. And again, I like the way, and Bruce talked about this at the beginning of this of this part, that the main reason he wanted to focus on Doc Rowe was because he could move between the foxholes, and we can see more of the characters, what's going on with them at this point.
Right. That makes sense. That's a good way to, good way to link up the various little stories that are happening
Exactly. And
in the
then
foxholes. Yeah.
we have a great transition shot from night to day.
Yeah. I spent a long time looking at this.
Looking at it from what perspective, to see if it's, I mean, my assumption is obviously special effects.
Yeah, I feel like the foreground, the ground, the snowy ground, and maybe some of the shrub kind of, scrub brush, I'm guessing is physical, probably on a little sound stage. The row of trees is all digital, and I know that because I can, there's a repeating pattern and it's really subtle, but you can see
Oh,
a
wow.
couple of the
I see
groupings
that.
of trees are
I see that. You
reused.
can see the,
Yeah.
right, if you look right
So
in the middle, you
the kind of,
see like what looks sort of like a snowman type of
that
thing,
little,
and then that's also all the way on the left. And right next to that is a smaller one, followed by I guess, a fatter one. Wow.
Well, it totally makes sense. I mean, in the 2000s, you would have just had a digital library of, pine trees or winter pine trees or whatever. And yeah, you would have just kind of randomized them as much as you can, but they clearly kind of just copied and pasted and moved and resized a little bit. So it's like the further away ones are smaller, but yeah, but it works. I mean, again, you're watching this, not
No, of course not,
examining
because
it,
it
you'll
flashed
never
by within,
notice.
2 seconds.
Yeah. But then I even noticed that, like, when it's still nighttime, at the roof of the frame, you see the tree branch that these guys are, I think it's the same branch that our guys here are meant to be underneath, because they have like a roof over their foxhole, and so that branch is there at the top of the frame, And then as it fades into daytime, that branch could literally fades away on its own. And so that, it's just, I like how this thing, this shot, it's just totally layered in different ways. And then, like, as it turns to daytime, like, this fog kind of lifts. It's really nice. I don't know. It's a nice
Yeah.
little
Oh
transition
wow.
shot that I
Yeah,
like.
I didn't even go into that much detail looking at it, but you're right. It's amazing. And then we get a shot of Doc in his own foxhole. Just again by himself, looking at some of the men in front of him. You see a couple guys with a mortar in front of them, and
And now suddenly that tree line, the German tree line
yes.
seems much closer than it did when we, in that transition shot, because that looked, hundreds of yards away, and this one seems like you could lob a grenade, It made me wonder, like, these guys are sitting here with a mortar. Like, why wouldn't you just constantly be firing that thing off? But I mean, I know they have, like, limited, ammunition and that kind of stuff, but they seem so close. Why wouldn't they just constantly
That's right.
be attacking each other? But, I get why you'd want to wait to for your
Yeah, for
prime
sure.
opportune moments, so.
And then in the back of Doc, we see Lipton come running by, and he goes, "Hey, Doc," and he goes, "Gonna be get busy, pal." Which is interesting for him to basically say that, "Doc, you're gonna have to deal with wounded." That's more or less what he's saying here. And then he runs through the line and says, "Hold your fire, boys. Don't let them draw you out. Hold your fire. Stay ready, boys." One of the guys says, "What the hell are we going to hit those things with, Lip?" And then there's like an explosion, and he goes, "Hold your fire." And he turns to one of the guys and, "Get ready, Walter." And there's another explosion. And he goes, "Stay in your holes, guys." So again, it's nice the way that they're showing this whole thing, by telling us, they're letting us see as these things move along. I like that. And then the firefight begins. And then they deal with this whole battle here.
It is interesting that Lipton has to kind of, obviously he runs by Doc and just kind of signals to him, like, hey, yeah, get ready. And then do we see it in this? Yeah, where after Smokey gets hit, someone jumps into Doc's foxhole and, like, has to really tell him, like, come on, man, we gotta go. It's interesting to see Doc throughout the rest of this, minute, and then even into the next set of minutes, he just has these long contemplative, beats where he's just, you don't know what he's thinking. I hope that they're not trying to suggest, like, oh, he's thinking about a girl, because it's not, this doesn't seem, I don't think it's that. I hope that's not what they were going for. It's interesting that he's so disconnected in a few of
Right.
these sequences.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting the way that they show this, but no question about it. The way that the way that they show this actual battle is just done really, really interesting and intensely at the exact same time. Just to really give us a look as to what these guys are really dealing with.
What I like that we get this, because we've had a previous, I think a previous battle here in the woods, and we got, like, we stayed with the action the entire time. Whereas here, as soon as Smokey gets hit, then it's like we follow the, we, because in this episode we're like following the medic, you know, we follow that, you know, we stay with Smokey and Doc Rowe basically. So we're leaving the firefight. So we get a real good look at like what it's like being a battlefield medic, you know, and how insane and impossible that
Right. Well, again,
seems.
that's part of the whole idea here is you know, for, to give us
Right. Yeah.
the feel as to you know, of what is going on here. And
Yeah.
they do a great job of making us feel that. Right. So basically you know, the battle continues, and we see that that Smokey gets hit, and you know, someone screams, "Smokey's hit! Medic! Hey, Eugene, let's go! Come on, let's go! Let's okay, go!" And you know, he makes it over to where Smokey is also, and you know, the way that they show this whole thing is just great. You know, I love the. I mean, even when Smokey gets shot, we see he gets shot twice. You know, it looks like he's shot in the arm, and then he shot elsewhere.
I wonder about that. I did look into Smokey Walter S. Gordon Jr. And talked about this injury that he got. It was when like the bullet goes in, travels across, basically goes through his spine and then out his other shoulder. So it's like it kind of goes through him, but not like front to, not straight through. It goes like almost diagonally through him. So I wonder if you're seeing kind of the
It's very
entry and
possible.
then the exit.
Right.
You know, it's not two shots, it's,
Right. So
but.
in the book on page 152, it tells us what happened here. It says a half hour later at 8:30,
Okay.
Gordon brewed himself a cup of coffee. He kept coffee grounds in the hand and in his hand grenade canister. And I'd melted the snow with my little gas stove, and I brewed up this lovely cup of coffee. As I started to sip it, the outpost came in with word that a German force was attempting to infiltrate Easy's lines. His squad leader, Sergeant Buck Taylor, told him to get on the machine gun. Gordon brushed snow from his weapon in the ammo box adjacent to the gun, telling his assistant, Private Stephen Grodsky, to look sharp. Pay attention to detail. A shot from a German rifleman rang out. The bullet hit Gordon in the left shoulder and exited from the right shoulder. It had brushed his spinal column. He
Okay.
was paralyzed from the neck down. He slid to the bottom of his foxhole. The canteen cup followed me, and the hot liquid spilled in my lap. I can see the steam rising upward to this very day. Basically, then they also say that Taylor and Earl McClung went looking for the sniper who shot Gordon. They found him and killed
Oh, wow.
And basically, I mean. What they say here about you know, who grabs him, it says Paul Rogers, Gordon's best friend, Jim Alley, and another member of the 3rd platoon rushed over to Gordon. They hauled him out of the hole and dragged him back into the woods. In Gordon's words, as a gladiator was dragged from the arena. In a sheltered area, they stretched him out to examine him. Medic Rowe came up, took a quick look, and declared that it was serious. Rowe gave Gordon morphine and prepared to give him plasma. So, you know, not an easy situation for these guys, for this to happen on you know, the morning before Christmas, you know, with all that they're
Yeah.
going through here. But you know, they show that Doc Rowe is somewhat in a daze. And then you go, "Doc, Smokey." He goes, "Hey, Mo, I got it. I'm keeping it for you." And you know, he reaches over to him, and you know, as soon as he's broken out of his stupor, he's there in a second. You know, and then two of the guys, probably Allie and Rogers, as I said, you know, basically pull Smokey back, and one of the guys pulls out his pulls out Gordon's pistol, and that's what he's talking about. He goes, "I got it. I'm keeping it for you." And he goes, "I can't feel my legs, Gene." And he says, "Take it easy." And he goes, he orders him that they should get to his foxhole. He goes, "My foxhole, get the plasma now." And they realize that the Germans are coming in for their attack, and they go, "Here they come." And we see the tanks starting to get a little closer to them also. And again, the way that this the way that they film this to make us feel as if we're right there is just amazing. I love how they constantly keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the camera is always moving. You know, it's really well done. All the battle scenes, you know, especially in this Bastogne, you know, sort of part of the story. Yeah, really hectic and really well done.
At this point, Doc Rowe rips open Gordon's sleeve in order to try to figure out a way of dealing with him. You know, and he bandages up one side and goes to try and go bandage the other side. And during this whole time, the battle is continuing. You know, one guy goes, "I got him, go. Machine gun, open fire left." And goes, "Sergeant Lipton." And he goes, "Doc, we got to get the hell out of here." He goes, "Stay with us, Smokey, stay with us. We got to get the hell out of here. Keep the line, you ready? All right, go. Stop, we got to stop. All right, take the plasma. All right. Hey, come on, Walt. Come on, buddy. Hurry, Doc. Come on, Doc. I got to get him back. I got to get back to the line. Okay. Lip. Yeah, buddy. You're standing on my hand. Sorry." So, you know, the Lipton is trying to do whatever he can to help both Smokey and Doc Rowe, and trying to also keep Smokey alert and awake, you know, after this whole thing. And they, you know,
yeah,
I always find it very interesting how they unceremoniously just drag people, you know, that have been wounded. I mean, obviously it makes sense. You know, you want to
get
out of the line of fire, but still,
yeah,
you know, the whole idea is you know, trying to figure out a way of getting this plasma into him. And you know, they're and I love how they, you know, they do the I think the chest rub. In order to try to figure it out, to make sure that, you know, they're awakening. And at the same time, we have, you know, Doc is trying to find a vein to put in his, you know, to put in the IV. Yeah. And, you
his
don't
arm.
Really notice the fact that Lipton's standing on his hand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I like that. Yeah, it's right in front of your face, but until he basically calls it out, yeah, you don't really think about it.
Exactly. Now, it makes me wonder, how does Smokey know this?
Did he just happen to be looking that direction, exactly. Maybe?
Exactly. That's the question.
I kept watching this and thinking about what it must be like. Like, on one hand, the idea of trying to patch somebody up in the middle of a battle, it just, I mentioned before, it seems insane and impossible. It's an impossible task that these medics had to, were you know, these situations that they were thrown into. It just seems like, you know, it'll sound heartless or whatever to say, like, are you not risking more people's lives to save one person? You know, would it not be better if, and I'm going to just say this, I don't believe it, but, you know, on one hand, it's like, should we just leave people as they are and then tend to them later? I mean, that's one, you know, option, obviously. That's not, I'm glad that they didn't do that, but it's the idea that that these guys run out into this, you know, this battlefield and are tasked with trying to get these guys, you know, patched up and everything. It's incredible. And yeah, I'm floored that these guys did it, you know, that they ran out there and tried to save people's lives, you know, in this situation. And I had to look up, like, you know, I was pretty sure, pretty confident that I was going to find the answer, but I looked up, you know, were medics like non-combatants, and were they not meant to be fired upon? And I was not surprised. I you know, found that, yeah, it was under the Geneva and Hague conventions. It was illegal to intentionally target medics during World War II. Not that it didn't happen,
Right.
but yeah, it, you would think, though, given that, like Doc Rowe should be, you know, in a white uniform with a big red cross, you know, just it would be easy to mistake this guy for just a soldier, because he's not, you know, he's got one little, you know, armband with the red cross on it, and I don't think he has it on his helmet. He's got the
No.
traditional spade on his helmet, I think. So I don't know. It's incredible that these medics were operating, you know, on the battlefield. So
For sure, but again, it goes back to where you were, you know, what you were saying goes back to where we were just talking about last week with my previous guest. You know that when who was it, Janovich was shot, and Babe was saying, okay, I'm gonna save you, I'm gonna save you, and you know, just stay still, and
oh yeah.
eventually they just needed to leave him on the ground.
Right.
You know, there wasn't much that they can do. You know, so you know, it raises the, it gives an answer to the question that you asked about you know, in these type of situations, what do you do? Do you try to save yourself, or do you do what you can to try to save someone who's been shot? So that.
I read that there were instances where they would fire on, you know, someone would be lying there injured, and then they would kind of use that person as the, you know, bait almost, you know, and then they would take out medics, you know, just adding to the casualties. So it's like,
Right. Well, again,
yeah.
that you know, another example from Saving Private Ryan. I mean, you have you know, Caparzo lying on the ground, and they're still shooting him.
Yeah.
And even before Caparzo was shot, there was, you know, the runners were shot, and they were still shooting them. You know,
Yeah.
war is brutal.
Right.
Not just you know, not just back in during World War II.
Right.
It goes all the way back to the Legionnaires, and it's still
That's
true
where it
today.
started, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It probably started even earlier than that, but and you know, as Lipton apologizes for stepping on Smokey's hand, this 5 minute segment ends. Now, I found it really interesting, just to let people know. Smokey was only paralyzed for like 6 weeks, and then he started
Yeah, I
shooting
saw that
back.
too. I was
And
surprised.
you know, he eventually, you know, I'm pretty sure he fully recovered, or at least mostly recovered. Again, that's great. Now, I love the fact that he is the same character who was collecting
Yes.
you know, the Purple Hearts.
Purple Hearts. Yeah.
So, you know, so it's interesting that you know, he got shot again, and you know, I'm assuming he got another one for this one.
Oh yeah, I read that you know, he had after this, like, he had back pain the rest of his life, you know, understandably. And people that didn't know his condition would always give him big hugs and pats on the back, you know, for, like, you know, thanking him for his service or whatever. And he would just take it. But then the people that knew him would, you know, would be very, like, you know, light, give light touches, you know, very gingerly hug him, knowing that how much pain that it caused him. But like he never showed any sign, outwardly to, people that would just give him a big hug. So.
Right. And I mean, also, there's a story that when he was in the when while he was recuperating in the hospital, so one of the doctors said to a nurse, "Keep an eye on this one. He's gold bricking." And apparently,
Yeah.
Gordon got infuriated, and later on, he found out that the doctor did it in order to piss him off, just to help reconnect nerves
Yeah.
and keep a fighting spirit in him. And apparently, he and this doctor became really, really close over the years, even afterwards. And the army didn't want to give him full disability, so there was a lot of bureaucratic
Yeah.
problems there also. And in the end, they discharged him with a 90% disability, because his father threatened to drive down to the U.S. Capitol building and march him down on the Senate floor, strip him down to his skivvies, and let someone besides the army make a determination. But yeah, as you said, he regained all bodily movements, but still had pain for the rest of his life. Which again makes sense that something like that. Yeah, that type
Yeah.
of injury would cause that. All right. So, is there anything else you wanted to mention about this particular segment?
No, I think I got
All right.
everything.
So now we will move on to today's segment, which is World War II trivia. Well, sorry, World War II movie trivia. World War trivia is fun also, but we talk about movies here, so why. Why would we, not why would we not talk about the movie aspects of it? So let's spin the wheel and see what questions you're going to get. In the 1970 film Catch 22, what is the name of the main character?
That's Mr. Bill Ketch.
No. Was
I
that
figured I
just a
might as
complete
well
guess,
say
or?
something, as I have no clue,
Okay.
so.
So, so it's Captain John Yossarian. And as everyone knows, the idea of Catch 22 is about a pilot stationed in Italy during the war, just desperately trying to prove he is insane to avoid flying more missions. Okay. All right. Let's spin the wheel and see what the next one is. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, what 1958 movie is based on a novel by Norman Mailer?
Naked and the Dead.
Very good. You have a good memory from Friday. Yeah, I love when those things happen because it
Yeah.
really is random. All right, let's spin the wheel for number three, and around and around and around the wheel goes. What famous musician is one of the men on the submarine in U-571?
I know this one. Mr. I want to give you the joke answer first. Mr. Bovine Joni himself. And then the real answer, Mr. John Bon Jovi.
Excellent.
Those are for the It's Always Sunny fans.
All right, let's spin the wheel again and see what else we get. So round and round and round the wheel goes. Who directed the 1987 film Empire of the Sun?
Spielberg, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
very good.
I was like in my for a moment I was like, wait, was that a Ron Howard or a Spielberg?
Nope, Spielberg. All right, so let's spin the wheel for the final time for your trivia questions. Okay, which 1965 film focuses on the last-ditch German offensive in the Ardennes during the winter of 1944-45?
Is that A Bridge Too Far?
No.
Oh.
Bridge Too Far is Operation Market Garden.
Yeah, I was thinking it happened around the same time frame and.
No, Market Garden happened in the end of September.
Oh, okay.
And we're asking what happened during the winter. Hint, hint, hint.
Wait a minute. Can you ask the question again?
Which 1965 film focuses on the last-ditch German offensive in the Ardennes during the winter of 1944-45?
Is it like Lion in Winter or something? I feel like winter's in the title.
No, winter is not in the line of in the winter is like a British royalty thing. It's about
yeah.
No, that's not it. But
okay.
What
I don't
what
know
action is going on now with what we're watching here? What
war?
What battle are they in the middle of?
Oh, this is the Battle of
yes.
the Bulge,
and that is
okay.
The name of the movie. The Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, okay.
Right. Okay. Nicely done. Nicely done. You did well. You got 3 out of 5. So that's pretty good.
Hey.
All right. And now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. And who knows? Maybe you'll get one of these again.
All right.
It is possible, and it has happened. All right. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay. This is a movie from 1958.
Okay. Is it written by Norman Mailer?
No, it's not. It takes place in Africa.
Okay.
And it's about a group of medical personnel, British medical personnel, trying to reach the British lines in Alexandria, trying to get across North Africa.
Oh, this isn't Lawrence of Arabia, is it?
No.
Okay. Nah,
Lawrence,
I don't know
Lawrence
my.
Of Arabia takes place before him.
Okay. I don't really know a lot about World War II in Africa. You know, like that whole section of the world is like in World War II. I'm not, you know, not
right.
super familiar with.
Okay, so the name of the movie is Ice Cold in Alex.
Never heard of it.
Okay, it's about they all dream about getting to Alexandria to have an ice cold beer. That's more or less what the main plot is all about. All right, so Travis, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Travis Bowe?
Once again, you can find me on Real Comic Heroes or Minute of Thieves.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie on Minute. You can find me on my website, movieonminute.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Travis, you feel like coming back tomorrow to finish off this 3-episode arc?
Well, I'm already in this foxhole. I've got it just the way I like it, so I'm going to stay here for a little bit.
All right, very good. So, until tomorrow, Karahi!
Karahi!